morning by you, by our Sunday school study, and by our special this morning. God in His wisdom has given us each gifts, and I'm thankful for yours. One time I was asked what mine was, and I don't know. But my answer was, perhaps it's faith. It seems like I go out each morning to begin my day and not knowing where it's going to lead me for sure or what problem I'm going to have to solve might be. But my faith and my trust is in the Lord. That's not to say that I do not return home some nights defeated, but there's another day. But my faith is in the Lord, for I know that He is my strength. And again, as I come to you, I come not by myself, but bringing with me to you the love of all your brothers and sisters in Independence. And in particular, I believe, I know there was others, but as I left Marvin and Edith were the last ones we saw as we left Independence last night, and they said, give them our love. And so I bring it to you. I have chosen for a scripture reading the first chapter, the sixth chapter of Ephesians. I don't think it's probably any secret to us what the occasion of the day is. And I often try to center my thoughts upon that. And I may not seem like it all the way, but that's my desire this morning, that we might honor our fathers this morning. The first verse says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, that thou mayest live long upon the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Paul here in his letter to the Ephesians tells them that this was the first commandment with promise. But it was about the fourth, I believe it was, in the ten that he gave Moses there on the mountain. But he promised them that if they would obey their parents, that they would live long in the land which they were journeying towards. Remember the time he gave them, they was without a land. They were journeying in the wilderness. And because of their transgressions, they journeyed there for 40 years. And I'm sure that some of them thought that they would never reach that promised land, and some of them didn't. They were not allowed to. But Paul gave that commandment or that promise unto the people in his day, which was, I'm not real sure how many years later, but his was about 60 or so A.D., and I'm not sure just what the year might be. It doesn't really matter. I don't believe that those commandments were given to Moses. But it stands good today. You and I were given this land by promise. Though these words are not recorded in specific as this land was designated and promised unto first and to the brother Jared and his brother and their families, and then again to Lehi and Nephi and their families and those that came with them. Probably our forefathers didn't know that promise until this precious book was printed in 1829. But it was a promised land, just like that land that was given unto the house of Israel that God gave those commandments to. And we, it is the same. I mentioned this last Sunday in the temple lot, and because last Sunday was Children's Day, and I felt it was good admonition for the children. It would seem a little bit strange, perhaps, to wonder why it is that God said that gave such a commandment and with a promise. Why is it so important for us to obey our parents and to honor them? And as I consider that thought, I feel that in disobedience to our parents is a first step toward disobedience to God. We learn obedience to our parents before we can know or understand God. And if we do not learn to honor and to obey our parents, the chances of us obeying and honoring God are not too good. It is a first step towards sin, and disobedience and disregard for all law and order. And so I'm sure it was wise in God to give us that commandment, but the disobedience and the lack of adherence to it is one that we see far too often in our day. I don't know how it was in days past. However, as we read through the Book of Mormon and other scriptures, we see there how sons many times with greediness and eagerness to, maybe I'm judging here, but it would seem that it was selfishness and a desire to be big and important, not only disobeyed their fathers, but they killed off their father who was the king so they could become king. And it led them into much transgression and difficulty. I want to go ahead and read the rest, or at least some more of this chapter, because I think it's important instructions and how we consider ourselves and how we conduct ourselves from day to day, though it really has nothing to do with that, the previous thought of honoring our fathers, but more to be submissive and to honor all men. It says, "Servants, be obedient to them that are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling and singleness of your heart." Move that down just a little bit. I don't know why it's ringing in your ears like it is mine or not. "And singleness of your heart as unto Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service unto the Lord and not unto men, knowing that whatsoever good thing a man doeth, the same shall he receive for the Lord, of the Lord, whether he be bond or whether he be free. And ye masters, do the same thing unto them, forbearing threatenings, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respecter of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and against powers, against rulers of darkness in this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." We sing a song sometimes, I believe it's 174. Faith of our fathers. "Living still, in spite of dungeon, fire, and sword, oh, how our hearts beat high with joy whenever we hear that glorious word. Our fathers chained in prisons dark, were still in heart and conscience free, and blessed with their children's fate, though they, like them, should die for thee. Faith of our fathers, we will strive to win all nations unto thee. Although the truth that comes from, all through the truth that comes from God, mankind shall then indeed be free. Faith of our fathers, we will love both friend and foe in all our strife and preach thee too as love knows how, by kindly words and virtuous deeds. Faith of our fathers, holy faith, we will be true to thee till death. I wonder sometimes if we have the, and now this is a probably a poor choice of words, but I can't come up with any others right at the moment, that we do not have the need for the faith that our fathers had. We have so many conveniences, and things in comparison are easy. We have our modern kitchens, our modern conveniences like our automobiles, and if we have to go a long ways, we have the trains and, well, not the trains I use very much more, but the airplanes that can swish us clear across our continent in less than a day. And there was a time when those who were traveling westward with a faith and a hope for something better took almost a year. And as the, and I don't remember the exact time, but as the Lehi and Nephi came to this land, they spent a long time out there on that ocean. Not in total darkness, because God provided light for them, as he did the Jaredites. But, well, I believe, thinking back, probably a pretty poor statement. They wasn't all cooped up in a dish on both top and bottom like the Jaredites was. But he did provide light for the Jaredites and a way to get air in when he was, no matter which way they was up, they could turn over and they still be have the provision for light and air. But they had these stones which provided light. It took a lot of faith, didn't it? And most of us today, when we get ready to go to work, we go out and we turn the key in our automobile and the thing comes to life and we're on the road. And of course, we, those in the Kansas City area, are troubled by the great multitude of vehicles on all sides of us. And sometimes it takes a little faith to face that. But we get used to that too. But I think that we do need that same faith that our fathers had. Because in spite of the conveniences, there is the temptations. And because of the conveniences, we have perhaps more time to yield into temptations. And I wouldn't say that there is more mischief to get into, but there is a lot of it that we can get into if we're not faithful and look to God for direction and for strength to maintain that goal, or the search for that goal of perfection and the glory of God. It would seem, might seem, that there is a little bit of contradiction sometimes in the scriptures, and to be sure I don't overlook what might be considered a contradiction, I have chosen to turn to the 10th chapter of Matthew and read there. As Christ was speaking, he said, "Think not that I am come to send peace to the earth. I am come not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's foes shall be they of his own household. He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he that loveth son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he that taketh not up his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. He that findeth his life shall lose it, and he that loseth his life for my sake shall find it. Now it might seem that there's a little bit of contradiction between that and the commandment that Paul recounted there in Ephesians. Though I think if we consider the teachings of Christ as a whole, we can understand what he's talking about and why he said what he said. He's not asking us to dishonor our parents, but to go back to the great commandment, to love the Lord God with all of our heart, might, mind, and strength, and our neighbor as ourselves. We are to have, and also the first two commandments there that he gave before he gave this one, the fourth one, was to have no gods before him. Because, as it says in other places, that he is a jealous God. I don't find that this is a discredit to God when he says, I am a jealous God, as he would be if I would, as Cletus would say, confess this morning that I am jealous. Really, as I've told others, if it was not a sin, I would be jealous of Cletus and Nancy this morning because I can't sing and I love it so much. But since it is, I won't be jealous. I will just appreciate your talent and let it be the blessing to me that it is. Now back to my thought, if I can bring it back. That he has asked us of us first place in our hearts, our first dedication, our first responsibility. And oft times, in fact, I think it is most times, in our love towards God, that first responsibility will be and include love towards our mother and father and honoring them. Because I feel that I do have a responsibility towards my mother and father. And my mother-in-law and father-in-law too. I have a responsibility there, and I do love them very much. But if I would not be offensive to say, because my first love was God, I am here today without my father and mother. But I hope to return to them tonight and to express my love to them at that time as I did. Well, didn't see him yesterday, talked to him on the phone, but Friday night when I saw them. And so I do not feel that it is a contradiction, but he has asked us to put everything in perspective or order that all might receive, as it were, their just dues. And this love that we're talking about at this time is something that we only given maybe a pint jar of. That's not true. There's enough for everyone. It's not limited. And the more we use it and the more we share it, the more there is. And the more there is, the happier we are. It indeed brings a joy into our hearts. And I have often wondered, maybe I shouldn't express this way, but I have seen people who seem to be always mad and unhappy and cranky, cantankerous, and I wondered, what is life to them? I'm sure that they do have their moments or their times when they can express love and appreciation, but it's not shown very much sometimes. But I only wish that they could, I hope that they enjoy life as much as I do, and enjoy the love and the Spirit of God as much as I do, and maybe even more in spite of their disposition, because I wouldn't want anybody to be miserable. And so it is that God has asked us first place in our hearts for Him. And maybe we could say second place, or at least after that, love towards our mother and fathers and our neighbors. And if we would read on, Christ said to love our enemies also and to pray for them. And I feel that if I could only accomplish that goal, that my joy and my happiness would be greater than it is. Luke expressed a thought that we might think about this morning. He was talking, recording, the experience of Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, prior to his birth, foretelling his mission. This is in the first chapter of Luke, and starting with the 13th verse. He was told that they would have a son, and he was up in years, and so was Elizabeth, his wife, and he couldn't understand how that could be. But an angel came to him to tell him these things. An angel said unto him, "Fear not, Zacharias, for thy prayer is heard, and thy wife Elizabeth shall bear thee a son, and thou shalt call his name John. And thou shalt have joy and gladness, and many shall rejoice at his birth. And he shall be great in the sight of the Lord, and shall drink neither wine nor strong drink. He shall be filled with the Holy Ghost, even from his mother's womb. And many of the children of Israel shall turn to the Lord their God. And he shall go before him in the spirit and the power of Elias, and turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the just, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." And that is also counted in Malachi. And there, I believe, instead of saying, it says something about turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to the fathers. Here it says, to the wisdom of the just. But the reason is to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. It's also recorded in this 3rd Nephi, the 11th chapter, and the 26th verse, and Matthew, the 11th chapter, and the 11th verse, and the 14th there. So it's not an isolated thought. It was a promise, but it was foretold that before the coming of Christ, he would send Elias the prophet. And here, Zechariah is told that that was John, not Elias, who was had lived many years prior. But he came forth in the spirit and power of Elias, as it said there. "And you shall go before him in the spirit and the power of Elias to turn the hearts of the fathers to their children." I'm not sure, and I perhaps it's not too important, just what the attitude of the people was at Malachi spoke to when he prophesied there, or the attitude of the people who Christ spoke to here, or the attitude of the people when John the Baptist went forth preaching and teaching in the wilderness. But I think it might be well if we recounted a little bit of the history of those people, of what it was that they was to turn their minds and their hearts back to. They had lived for some 400 years approximately in the land of Egypt. The last part of that was in slavery. And they were brought out by the power of God as he used Moses and Aaron to lead them. And they encountered many, many miracles along the way. And I cannot point a finger and say, why did you do it? Since I am not faced with those problems, I don't know what I would do, was I there. But I hope I can learn a lesson from their mistakes, because I would hate to make all those mistakes all over again. But we know the story about the Red Sea being parted so that they could escape the armies of the Pharaoh of Egypt, where they were allowed to go through on dry land, and the water came back and drowned the army of Pharaoh, and they were escaped on the other side. And when they did, they returned thanks and sang and rejoiced. But this is what Moses was told and to tell his people. And thou shalt remember all the way which the Lord thy God led thee these 40 years in the wilderness, to humble thee and to prove thee, to know what was in thine heart, whether thou wouldst keep his commandments or no. And he humbled thee and suffered thee to hunger and to feed thee with manna which thou knewest not, neither did thy fathers know, but that he might make thee know that man doth not live by bread only, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of the Lord doth man live. Thy raiment waxed not old upon thee, neither did thy foot swell for 40 years, that thou shalt also consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. And perhaps that is a point that many of us have never been cause to consider, that the clothes that they left Egypt with carried them 40 years without wearing out. Their shoes didn't wear out. Their feet didn't swell because of the walking that they did. I presume that they had to, as the children grew, they had to replace their clothes. I doubt, but I wouldn't say it was impossible that their clothes grew with them. But whatever it was, God provided for them. As it says here, he provided them food, manna, that they didn't know anything about. And they also provided them with quails. He provided them with water. They didn't go without. But it wasn't as easy as ours. They didn't turn on the faucet to get the water. They had to go to the spring that he caused and get the water there. They had to gather the manna every morning. They couldn't get enough to go all week. And again, their faith was tried, because anything that they gathered over what they could eat that day did not be preserved for the next day. It was ruined. It wasn't fit to eat. So every morning they would gather enough for that day. And on the sixth day, they gathered enough for 2 days. And that day, on the seventh day, that manna was still good to eat through that day and that day only. Can we see the hand of God? I think we can. But it required faith, didn't it? The faith of our fathers. And I think it's living still. Again, as we think about the fifth verse, it says, thou shalt consider in thine heart that as a man chasteneth his son, so the Lord thy God chasteneth thee. And in another place it said, the chastening for the moment is not pleasant. And I forget just how it's all worded, but we're told that it's for our best good. Because they chasten us because they love us. And I read the other day a little article by Edward Guest, I believe it is, and I'm not even sure who Edward Guest is. Must be pretty important. He he printed his article. But anyway, his counseling was to children to tell them that the counseling and the chastising and the restrictions that our parents put on us is not because they're mad at us or because they don't like us or to just be mean to us, but because they love us. Because of their experiences in life, they know of the pitfalls that can come because of some of the things that we think are perfectly all right and might be fun or whatever. And so as our parents many times consider the course in which activities will lead us, might say no for our own good. And usually when we're a little older, we can see the wisdom in it. Therefore thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God, and walk in his ways, and fear him. For the Lord God, thy God bringeth thee unto a good land, a land of brooks of water, of foundations and depths that spring out from the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, and vines and fig trees, and pomegranates, a land of oil olive and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness, and thou shalt not lack in anything in it, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. And when thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God, and not keep his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I commanded thee in this day. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full, and hast built goodly houses and dwell therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply, and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied, and that thou hast and all that thou hast is multiplied, then thine heart be lifted up, and thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein the fiery serpents and the scorpions and the drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water from the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, that he might prove thee and do thee good at that thy latter end. And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of mine hath gotten me this wealth. And we hear that so much. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant with which he sware unto thy father, as it is this day. And it shall be that if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyeth before your face, so shall ye perish, because ye would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. That's the same promise he made unto Jared, to Lehi, for this land. And he didn't stop there. He said, anyone who lives upon this land must serve the God of this land, or when they are ripe in iniquity, they will be swept off. And we have the testimony of those men in this book that has happened literally twice, and to a good extent three times. And it's foretold that there will be a fourth, in which we will be a great part of. One we don't look forward to with any great degree of anxiety, but one that we are concerned about, one that we should pray about, and one in which we have a responsibility for. I guess the question that comes to my mind, have I done my part to meet that challenge? Have I sought diligently enough to make my associates, my loved ones, aware of the, not only the pleasures and the privileges and the joy of living upon this land, but the curse that goes with it? That when we disobey God, we will perish. I'm afraid I haven't. Because there have been instances when I've been that frankly told, I don't want to hear about it. I've heard enough already. But that does not excuse me, does it? I think another thing that we might consider is what's told us in the 9th chapter of Deuteronomy there, starting with the 3rd verse. Not for thy righteousness, or for the uprightness of thy heart, dost thou go to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, and that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto thy father Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand, therefore, that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people. And so it was for us, or for our forefathers, that they were not given this land for their righteousness, but because of the wickedness of the people that possessed it. And I am not here to judge how stiff-necked they were. I am sure that they made many mistakes, as did the forefathers of the people who dwell here in this land. But God blessed them because he wanted them to possess this land, and because of the disobedience of those who dwelt here. I'm sure that many, if not all of you, have read the book, The Light and the Glory, that tells of the hand of the Lord who was with our forefathers as they came here to this land and possessed it and took advantage of it. And Don and Bonnie was just back to East just about a month ago. And they learned some stories back there. It said, if I might take a few moments, I shouldn't perhaps. They didn't go to the proper places at the perfect time, but it worked out just perfect. There was a real crowded time because of the end of the school year, and many field trips were taken where children were bused in to make the tours. But it seemed like they always got there right at the close of the day. And a couple times at least, the tour guide was had a few minutes before they had to quit. And because their group was adults, they talked with them a little bit more than they did the children. They just give them the quick abbreviated tour, and Donnie and Bonnie, they'd take them upstairs, maybe see the upstairs bedrooms and whatever. And then they got back, they talked a little while. And I don't remember where this all happened, but anyway, they told them some stories about the winter at Valley Forge of 1776, I believe it was, when those people would have starved to death had it not been for the hand of the Lord. He said at one time, and I don't remember, wasn't listening too close, but just kind of got on the tail end of the story, that they were without food, and something very unusual happened. The stream that ran through there was filled with some kind of fish, and I don't know what kind it was, but it was unusual for them to be there at that time of the year for their spawning and whatever. And the river was so full that they rode their horses out into the middle of the river and stomped up and down to cause the turbulence in the water to keep the fish corralled, so to speak. And the rest of them run out into the river with their boots and blankets and whatever, and threw the fish out on the ground. That's how thick they were. Just threw them out on the ground, and others out there grabbed them. They salted them down and cured them, and they had food to survive with. At another time, when food becomes scarce, I believe he said it was doves, flew over so low that they took their boots off and just flogged them out there with their boots. And they were sustained again by the hand of the Lord. And that's only a few. And perhaps, like in our own lives, the hand of the Lord is there, and oftentimes we overlook it and consider it as not, you know, just good fortune. But as I was told one time, nothing comes by accident. And I feel that my life has been richly blessed. If we would turn to, and I don't want to ignore the promises in this book to those people here. In the first chapter of Ether, and starting with the fifth chapter in the sixth verse. Now Moroni would speak somewhat concerning these things. I would show unto the world that faith is things which are hoped for and not seen. Wherefore despise, dispute not because ye see not, for ye receive no witness until after the trial of your faith, for it was by faith that Christ showed himself unto our fathers after he was risen from the dead. And he showed not himself unto them until after they had faith in him. Wherefore it must needs be that some had faith in him, for he showed himself not unto the world. But because of the faith of men, he has shown himself unto the world, and glorified the name of the Father, and prepared a way that thereby others might be partakers of the heavenly gift, that they might hope for those things which they have not seen. Wherefore ye may also have hope, and be partakers of the gift, if ye will but have faith. Behold, it was by faith that they of old were called after the holy order of God. Wherefore, by faith was the law of Moses given. But in the gift of his Son hath God prepared a more excellent way, and it is by faith that it hath been fulfilled. For if there was no faith among the children of men, God can do no miracles among them. Wherefore, he showed not himself until after their faith. Behold, it was the faith of Alma and Amulek that could cause the prisons to tumble to the earth. Behold, it was the faith of Nephi and Lehi that wrought the change upon the Lamanites, that they were baptized with fire and with the Holy Ghost. Behold, it was... I might pause there for a moment and remember that these Lamanites were their enemies. And because of their love and their concern for them, not only because they wanted to stop the war and the bloodshed which was being brought upon their own people, but because of their love and their desire that these Lamanites might know the Lord their God, they went down there in great risk to teach them. And God blessed them in it. Behold, it was the faith of Ammon and his brethren which brought so great a miracle among the Lamanites. Yea, even all they who wrought miracles wrought them by faith, even those who were before Christ, and also unto them who were after. And it was by faith that the three disciples obtained a promise that they should not taste of death. They obtained not the promise until after their faith. And neither at any time hath any wrought miracles until after their faith. Wherefore, they first believed in the Son of God. And there were many whose faith was so exceeding strong, even before Christ came, who could not be kept from within the veil, but truly saw with their eyes the things which they had beheld with the eye of faith, and they were glad. Behold, we have seen in this record that one of these was a brother of Jared, for so great was his faith in God, that when God put forth his finger, he could not hide from the sight of the brother Jared because of his word which he had spoken to him, which word he had obtained by faith. And after the brother Jared had beheld the finger of the Lord because of the promise which the brother Jared had obtained by faith, the Lord could not withhold anything from his sight. Wherefore he showed him all things, for he could no longer be kept from within the veil. It is by faith that my fathers have obtained the promise that these things should come unto their brethren through the Gentiles. Wherefore the Lord hath commanded me, yea, even Jesus Christ. And Nephi was concerned, Ramoni was concerned here because of, he was afraid that the Gentiles, you and I and our generation, would mock them and make fun of them because of their words, because they felt like they was awkward in writing. And I can relate to that. He said, you made Ether and the brother Jared mighty in writing as well as speaking, but you just made us so we could talk and we can't write because our hands are awkward. And he told Moroni here, said, don't let that bother you. You have fulfilled your responsibility, and if the Gentiles don't have charity, that's their problem, to put it in my words. The promise that he mentioned here, that it was by faith that our fathers have obtained a promise that these things should come unto their brethren through the Gentiles. Therefore, the Lord had commanded, yea, even Jesus Christ. Back in Enos' day, he was concerned because of the war and bloodshed going on there, and he prayed unto God that the Lamanites would be converted and humbled. But if his people should perish, that God would preserve their records for you and I, and for the Lamanites, that they at some day might be converted. And he was granted that promise. It was in God's will. And Enos had asked for it, and he was given the promise that those records would be preserved, and they were. But it was through the faith of each one of them that they wrote with a hope and a trust that the day would come that they would come out of the dust and be a means of bringing salvation unto the Lamanites, who at that time were their enemies. And we are still looking forward to that today. The record has come forth. And when it will accomplish that end that it was sent, we don't know. But I, name given whereby salvation cometh. Therefore I would that ye should take upon you the name of Christ, all that have entered into the covenant with God, that ye may be obedient to the end of your lives. It shall come to pass that whosoever doeth this shall be found at the right hand of God, for he shall know the name by which he is called, and he shall be called by the name of Christ. And now it shall come to pass that whosoever shall not take upon him the name of Christ must be called by some other name, wherefore he findeth himself on the left hand of God. And I would that ye should remember also that this is the name that I said I should give unto you, that never should be blotted out except to be through transgression. Therefore take heed that you do not transgress, that the name be not blotted out of your hearts. I say unto you that I would that ye should remember to retain the name written in always in your hearts, that ye be found not on the left hand of God, but that ye hear and know the voice by which ye shall be called, and also the name by which ye are called. And he goes on to tell us that we cannot serve two masters, as Christ himself admonished in his accounting to these people and also to the people upon the Jerusalem area. We cannot serve two masters. We cannot serve God and mammon. But to whichever one we serve, there will our heart be, and that's where our love will be. But if we give God first place, that there will be a place for all mankind to come within that love and that our compassion And we can fulfill those promises. We have been given a great inheritance in our day. Not only this land which we have, but those of our forefathers who struggled, who worked with all their effort to bring us to this place in life, to, under the hand of God, bring forth the Church of Christ, and to give us that name, the name of Christ, that we might know what name we are called by, and to leave with us the records to instruct us in the ways of truth and righteousness, that we would need not err, that that name would not ever be blotted out. So we have a great reason to be thankful this morning and to be considered of the promise and of the heritage that is ours because of the faith and the efforts of others. And that is not to say that perhaps along the way those forefathers made some errors, as did the house of Israel. And some of them are errors that we cannot afford to repeat. But we need to lean upon God and to rejoice in the promise that He has given us. May God bless you and keep you. And my prayers will always be with you.
Thank you, Brother Leslie. I have here the referendum ballot for this year, 1988, and the church has come to agreement that we should get together on this day and discuss if we feel like discussing and make a determination of our desires as far as voting for or against the referendum item. Let me read what we have as Bill number 1. It has two paragraphs. It's sort of a preamble to it, and then the last paragraph, I think, is what actually is the real item. It says it is a practice within the church that persons who want to transfer membership from one local to another local to do so by contacting the locals involved in the transfer. The local recorder then notifies the recorder for the general church. It doesn't say which the one receiving or the one that's giving is supposed to notify the general church, but it should be done anyway. Second paragraph, when a current local member wishes to withdraw from the church or otherwise wishes to alter his membership status, it should be through the local using the same process. It is therefore moved that when the general church or any church official is notified of a member's desire to withdraw his membership, that the local involved be notified prior to the taking of any action. The final action should be taken only after consultation with the local pastor. The ballot here is for each one to sign and put their address, and over in the right column, either yes or no. There's no partly yes or partly no. It's or you can't change the wording of it, but it's either you are in favor or not in favor. Is there any questions, anyone, pertaining to that which is on the ballot? If you ask me, and you haven't, but I guess I'll offer anyway, my thoughts. And I don't, I'm not trying to promote anybody to vote one way or the other. But I don't think it's really necessary. I think that things are being handled pretty well as is. There was a thought maybe that it wasn't being handled too well because they thought one person had had their name dropped from the church without the local knowing it. And when they dug deep enough, they found that the error was that it never was on a general church record. The one that did the baptism failed to report to the general church. So I don't know. I guess I have a feeling that it's sort of trying to slap somebody's hand a little bit, and I'm not necessarily for it. But you vote your conscience. Let's use number 354 for a closing song. Yes.
For those who may not know, would you announce about the 2 days?
Oh, yes. Brother Kenneth Smith passed away on Thursday, I believe, and the funeral is this afternoon at 2:30 or 3:30? 2:30. 2:30 this afternoon. And the other name escaped me.
Joe Gibbons.
Joe Gibbons. I don't know the individual. Might be I'd recognize him if I saw his face, but I don't really know myself. But he passed away on Saturday.
And sure what day the services will be.
Friday?
Tomorrow. Friday, I believe.
Friday. And the service will be tomorrow? I hadn't heard when the service would be at the time that you called me that it hadn't been.
They will be at the Old Speak Funeral Home.
Both of them?
No.
No, oh, oh.
Kenneth Smith will be at the new. Mm-hmm.
Well, the of course, Brother Kenneth's of insignificance now because can't nobody get there if they want to ever so bad now. Joe Gibbons would be at the Speaks Funeral Home there near the Temple Lot. Speaks. Is that the one on Fuller? Fuller and Lexington? Or Fuller and Winter Road? Walnut. Okay, that's the one closer to our church. The one down in Fuller is... something else. I can't think of Carson. I tried Carson. Number 354. Would you stand, please?